Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Host Mark Levine reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Today we're going to talk about the victim card and how Republicans play it very well. It had its most obvious card playing in at the Kavanaugh hearings, and we're certainly going to go there. But there really is a long history here, and that's one we need to call out. In fact, I would argue that the victim card in modern times really dates back to Patrick Buchanan. Remember him, Pat Buchanan, that conservative pundit that ran against George Bush Sr. in 1992? He's really the one who said that white people are victims, victims of blacks, victims of Jews, victims of women, victims of really anyone who wanted equal rights in America. And he was kind of left out of the Republican Party back in 1992 when he talked about we need a culture war. This was before Fox News existed. This was long before Donald Trump. I would argue that Donald Trump is the manifestation of Pat Buchanan, not as smart as Pat Buchanan, but definitely up there in using the angst of privileged people, or more specifically, even unprivileged people who think they are privileged. But I'm talking about white men, but a very specific group of white men, those that have a chip on their shoulder. And why they do, how it got there, and how Republicans have played this card very, very well. I was thinking about the victim card. I was started, of course, with true victims. Now, it used to be that the privileged class, the United States of America, didn't care about victims, right? White people came to these shores in the 17th century, and they saw Native Americans. They didn't consider them fully human, so they just massacred them, took their land. Sometimes when Native Americans were kind to them, they used that kindness to expropriate more land. Other times they, they just led to massacres. But they were considered, savages. And therefore, they didn't have any rights. So there was no real victimization or anything. White men just took them over. Soon after that, white men brought African slaves to these shores. And again, slaves weren't considered fully human. They were African. They were subhuman. And as slavery became racially based, which occurred in the 1600s, there were all kinds of teachings that white men were superior to Africans, superior to Native Americans. When it came to women, again, men didn't consider them fully people. Jefferson said all men are created equal, and women certainly didn't have the right to vote. A man, for example, could simply rape his wife because he owned her. He could take his property whenever he wanted. In fact, marital rape didn't become against the law until very recently, only about 50 years ago. Wife was a man's property. In fact, until 100 years ago, married women could not own property on their own until the Married Women's Emancipation Act that occurred around the time that women got the right to vote, almost 100 years ago now. We're coming up on the 100th anniversary of women getting the right to vote next year, I believe, in 2020. 2019, 2020, 2 years. In any case, women weren't fully people. They weren't talked about. They couldn't be elected to things. They didn't have the right to vote. They had to submit to their husbands. They could be kind of sold. Actually, that's kind of what a dowry is, right? It's when the woman's father sells her to the woman's husband. And listen, I mean, this is stuff that's gone on for thousands of years. I mean, it's in the Bible. Though the Bible has very strong women characters, it's clear that women are kind of the possessions of men. So there really wasn't a victim card to play. Women, slaves, Native Americans Heck, even white men without property at one point were just not worth it. They weren't valuable. They weren't important. They weren't didn't have voices to be considered. That was probably the first thing that dropped. Immigrants, they didn't speak English. They're not worthy. You didn't really care what they thought because they weren't good enough. They were Germans or Irish. Those were kind of our two earliest immigrant groups. Or Catholics. They weren't considered fully American either, unless they were Protestant Christians. Again, the prejudices go and fall away. Jews couldn't play the victim card in the Holocaust because the Nazis didn't consider Jews fully human. In fact, they considered them vermin, something to be exterminated, like you might do a vermin infestation, like you might do if you had ants or flies in your home. If a woman cries out and says, "Protect my child," the Nazi would just shoot her because she's not really human. She's lesser than. So in the first many, many millennia of humanity, the first centuries of the United States of America and around the globe, you couldn't play a victim card. Who would listen? The victims were not considered human. That starts to change. I was thinking about the first time the victim card was successfully played, and it was played, of course, on behalf of real victims. And I thought back to Uncle Tom's Cabin, right? That's Harriet Beecher Stowe's fictional account of a very cruel slave master that occurred right before the Civil War. Electrified America. The book flew off the shelves. Interestingly, it was a woman who wrote it. I always thought that's not an accident. And she told the story from the slave's point of view. She actually put people into the mind's eye of the victim. And it had power. It had power. It added to the abolitionist cause. It added to the strength of the Northern cause. That book is probably the most influential book of the first 100 years of American history. That book changed minds. People started to see blacks as people and not as chattel. As we go into the women's movement, women start to, going up to the suffragettes, march as equals, as human beings, saying we have every right to vote that our husbands do. We are not property. And that led to getting rid of the restrictions on married women owning property, the Married Women's Emancipation Acts that occurred between 1900 and 1920, and eventually led to the right to vote. Women said, we can't be victims, we are equals. But in talking about how they'd been victimized, they were able to get equal rights. Of course, no one was a greater master at using the power of the victim to get equality than Dr. Martin Luther King. Originally, Martin Luther King did not want to put children on the bridge in Selma, knowing they could get hurt. And he was persuaded to do it. In hindsight, it was probably the right thing to do. Some would say it was cruel. But when people saw the high-powered fire hoses blasting children, injuring children, the dogs biting, people just marching for equality, people felt sorry for them. The 1960s, the Civil Rights Movement was on the evening news. It was on television. And you could see the victimization. It was not just something that occurred somewhere else. You could see it. It was right before you. Who could deny the humanity of the people marching for their rights? Yes, blacks were victimized. Yes, they made clear they were. And in fact, even very respectfully wearing their Sunday best and sitting at the Woolworth Five and Dime as, animals, yes, humans, white, angry humans, racists, would spit on them and throw things at them and scream at them and beat them up. But the victims, through their courage and their dignity, eventually would lead to, yes, the March on Washington and the Voting Rights Act of 1964 and 1965 and the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So when victims announced who they are and what they're about, they could actually get more equality. The most recent example, of course, is the Me Too movement. What is the Me Too movement? Think about it. It's people rising up and saying, I was sexually assaulted. Me too. I was a victim. And now, and frankly, most victims don't even like the term victim. And I'm using it because Republicans are playing the victim card. But most people I know consider themselves survivors. It's actually a much nicer term than victim. Victim is something that's done to you. A survivor is something that you come away with. It's your own power against the horror. But survivors were saying, me too, I was victimized, but I'm not going to be silent. I'm going to fight back. I'm going to let people know what happened to me so that it doesn't happen to someone else. I want to encourage people to speak out so that we stop awful examples of sexual assault. And it was effective. I already talked about the Me Too in the past, but it's been a couple years now. It's been effective. It has brought attention to this. Most women know that, yes, they have to be careful late at night. They can't walk on the streets the way men can. They've got to be worried any moment that someone might rape them. That's the reality of their lives. And most men, I dare say, don't think about that. Most men aren't thinking about the fact. They might say to the woman, hey, you know, don't walk home alone, but they're not thinking of what it's like to worry that that nice person you're talking to, if he gets the chance, he might just try to rape you. In fact, some women who want jobs, and there's this nice guy who they've known professionally, and he invites her to his hotel room because, heck, he's in from out of town. He's a businessman. He's a Hollywood person. He's a person of some power. He's in from out of town. A hotel is a natural place to meet. Maybe not a hotel room, but a hotel restaurant would be a natural place to meet. But then the guy invites her to the room, and the woman, maybe before the Me Too movement, maybe doesn't think about the fact that that's a very suspicious thing to do. And then, after she's sexually assaulted, she's victimized again by the stigma that keeps her from speaking out. The point is that real victims, real people who've been mistreated in American history, throughout the world, have used their real status as victims to say, stop victimizing me. Give me equal rights under the law. Give me the same chance that you have. I'm not asking for extra privileges. I'm asking for the same rights you have. The right to walk down the street without being raped. The right to vote. The right to hold a job. The right to have a house. The right to be treated equally. That's the proper use of victimization, to call it out. To say, yes, what we did to the Native Americans was genocide. Call it out. Back it up. It's factually true. And the question then imposes a sense of justice. What are we going to do about it? Now, Republicans would say that's playing the victim card. To me, that's just fighting for equality under the law. No, it's Republicans. It's Republicans that have turned this strategy around, a very successful and justified strategy, and now they're using it to claim that they are victims. We'll talk about how they do that right after the break. Call in if you like, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275, right back after this.
Never confuse Mark Levin with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. So as we've discussed, victims throughout history, people who've been mistreated based on whatever, their gender, their ethnicity, their sexual orientation, their religion, people who've been victimized point out how they've been victimized and in many cases have been able to achieve more equality. Well, it's a strategy that's worked. And so Republicans are trying a new strategy. It's a strategy of the overlord. It's a strategy that the person in power is the real victim. The person with all the control, the person who with all the privilege, they're the ones we have to feel sorry for. It seems counterintuitive. It seems like it would be hard to do, but the Republicans have done it very, very well. That's the focus of today's show. Before we get there, Anita on line 3 in San Antonio, Texas, has her own thing to say on that. Go ahead, Anita.
Hi, Mark.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. I don't think this is anything new. The Germans felt like victims of a Jewish conspiracy.
That's right.
And that was what they were the victims. White men who settled here felt like they were the victims of these savage Native Americans. And they had to take it from these savages. They had to take the land from the savages because otherwise these savages would just savage white people.
That's right. I mean, they would say that Native Americans, the Indians, wanted white skulls. And you're right. The Nazis claimed that the Jews were part of this international conspiracy to harm Germans.
Exactly.
That's exactly right. I'm not saying it's new. Go ahead.
But even now, with men feel like abusive men have always considered themselves victims of some sort of. They feel justified. And if you've ever talked to a man who's an abusive man, he will tell you, well, they will give excuses like she's this or she's that, whatever, because they feel
she deserves it. They might
deserve. So I don't think this is anything new. And I think what's happening is enough people have become the victims of white men to stand up and say, you know what? We're tired of you victimizing us. We are the victims. We are the real victims. Not you. They are always the victims. They're the victims of immigrants. They've always felt like they were the victims, and they've always used that. And I think it's because they have this sense of entitlement.
I think that's exactly right. And that's, in fact, what we're going to get into in the second half of the show. It's very much a sense of entitlement. It's interesting. When someone else who you consider lesser than you wants to be equal to you, and you don't believe in the equality of mankind, then that is seen as taking from your privilege. Now, wait a minute. No, I'm used to having more rights than you, and you want equality under the law? I don't believe in equality under the law. You're oppressing me. You're oppressing me because you want a fair deal, and I believe in a hierarchical caste system. Now, it's interesting because I don't know that they really phrase it in that way to themselves. It's just, oh, those immigrants want what Americans want, or, you know, the savages, the Native Americans, or the women thinking that they can do everything the way a man can do it, or you know, it's. But what it really is,
yes.
you're absolutely right. It's their own insecurity.
Sense of entitlement.
And sense of entitlement. That's exactly right. Stay on with me, Anita, if you would. I've got to take a break, but I'd love to get back with you and we'll explore this issue further. Folks, if you want to join us, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Very important issue for our time. So we'll be right back right after this.
Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about privilege and the victim card. Is there a white privilege? Well, of course there is. If you're white, you're far less likely to be stopped by the police, far less likely to be imprisoned for something you didn't do, far more likely to be trusted by your average person on the street. It's wrong, but it exists, and white people need to recognize it exists. Is there a male privilege? Of course there's a male privilege. You can walk down the streets, and it's less likely you're going to be attacked. You don't have to worry so much about being in a hotel room with someone you don't know that well. You're less likely to be attacked. You don't have to worry so much when you go on a date that you're going to be drugged. There is definitely a male privilege. That doesn't mean all white men are privileged, right? there is a huge privilege of wealth. If you're wealthy, you're more likely to get out of trouble. If you're a wealthy white man accused of a crime and you're guilty, you're likely to get more justice than a poor black man who's innocent of that exact same crime. Wealth matters. Wealth gets you into places. There's sexual orientation privilege, right? If you're straight, it's a lot easier to go around than if you're gay. And you have to explain yourself all the time. And there's prejudice, obviously, against gay people. If you're Christian, there's a privilege. But even if you're a straight, white, male Christian who's rich, well, most of them are pretty privileged. It's kind of hard to imagine those in that category. They're not. That doesn't mean you're a bad person, though. Well, hey, look at Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He was straight, white, male Christian, very rich, very privileged, but he was not privileged in his ability. He had polio. Indeed, polio probably changed him from being a real jerk into recognizing what it's like to be underprivileged. He was underprivileged in his ability to get around. Changed him completely. Yes, those of us who are of good health are privileged. You know what? People who are better looking are privileged. People who are in good shape are more privileged. People who are overweight or people who are very short, people who have some kind of physical deformity, it's not their fault, but they are not given the same advantages others are. So frankly, just about all of us at one time or another fit in the category of someone who's underprivileged. Here's the thing. If we judge people as individuals and we don't convey privilege based on race or religion or sexual orientation or ability or looks or any of that, that's the kind of world we're trying to lead to. But one of the things Republicans do is they take the privilege itself and turn it around on its head. They say that the privileged class is actually suffering because they're being victimized by people who want equal rights. The poor cake baker having to serve gay people is being victimized because he wants to be a bigot and they're not letting him be a bigot. Christians who have to live with people who are not Christian in their country saying happy holidays. Happy holidays is considered offensive. Someone telling you to be happy and to enjoy the holidays is offensive because they're not telling you specifically Merry Christmas, even though we don't live in a Christian nation. They're offended by that. Think about that. Offended. Here, black people were lynched, can't get a job, stopped by the police, being gunned down by the police in the streets. Colin Kaepernick gets on his knee to fight that, and they're offended. They're offended for the sake of the national anthem. I love the national anthem. I stand up and sing it. I'm as patriotic as the next guy. Colin Kaepernick is being patriotic when he kneels to try to stop police from shooting unarmed black men. Who has the right to be more offended? Someone who knows that innocent people are being shot every day? Or someone who worries that someone else is not being sufficiently patriotic? I know many white people who wear the flag as shorts and t-shirts. Who's the one that's not being patriotic then? But it's this victimization of the overlords, the people in power. Oh my God, I have to suffer from too much regulation. Regulation. Regulations are horrible. They're forcing me not to pollute the air, not to pollute the water. Poor Koch brothers. Poor rich people having to pay more taxes than the poor people because they can afford it. The victimization of the overlords. It's the heart of the Republican strategy. All right, got a bunch of callers on the line. Let me finish up with Anita, who called in. I know we largely agree, but there may be something I didn't add that you want to add. Please do.
No, I just want to add that I think they actually believe they are victims. I think they do not feel empathy until something is part of their experience. Like the senator whose son comes out as gay.
Mm-hmm. Rob Portman.
Or they...
Dick Cheney, for that matter. Dick Cheney was horribly anti-gay until his daughter came out. And then suddenly he's supportive.
Or Rob Portman. I think it was Rob Portman.
Yeah, it was. Rob Portman was the father of the gay son. Never did anything pro-gay until his son came out. That's exactly right.
Exactly. Or, like, if they need, like, I think one of the senators, I can't remember who it was, he lost, Illinois senator, who had a stroke and then became more sympathetic towards people on Medicare, to Medicare, to covering people on Medicare, not cutting Medicare benefits.
Yep. Sometimes people have to be there before they can see themselves and others.
Some people don't have to experience it to be empathetic.
That's true.
But there are those people that, unless it's within their experience, they just don't get it. When you say Black Lives Matter, they don't get it.
No, they're like, well, what about white lives? And it's like, white people are not being hunted down by police forces.
But they don't understand that. Exactly. And they just can't get it. And no matter how you try to explain it to them, they just lack that ability to, I don't know, it's critical thinking.
Well, Anita, I completely agree with you. I think what it really, you're right that empathy is the heart of it. The word empathy is exactly it. It's seeing yourself in another person's shoes. It's what Harriet Beecher Stowe was able to bring in the Civil War. White people were like, oh, wow, it must really be terrible to be a slave. You know, or even Franklin Delano Roosevelt, as I pointed out, was a pretty privileged guy. But after he had polio, suddenly he could see things in a different light. You shouldn't have to suffer tragedy to have some empathy for others. But it's true that it causes that. In fact, one of the things about Brett Kavanaugh that really struck me is this is a guy who never, never had any reason to have empathy for anyone else and clearly doesn't. Right? I mean, he's not only a straight white male, he's a rich son. He didn't even have to do well in school. He didn't do well at Yale. By the way, Yale doesn't rank people. He didn't do well in school. He was drunk all the time, but he was of the privileged class. He gets what he wants.
He knew he was entitled to
Supreme Court justiceship.
He was going places. He was going places. It didn't matter. He had the connections. He went to the right school.
That's right.
It really didn't happen.
That's right. Look at how angry Lindsey Graham was. You have put him through hell. You have tortured his family. You know, I don't think his two little girls were being tortured. I really think they'll be okay.
Well,
even if their father wasn't a Supreme Court justice, you know what? Hundreds of millions of Americans aren't Supreme Court justices. The vast majority of us aren't. But this, oh my God, you've been through hell because you have to defend yourself. Even if someone put a false allegation on me, right? I wouldn't like it, but I would defend myself, and it happens. I mean, Donald Trump accused five black teenagers in Central Park of a crime they did not commit. They served many, many decades in jail for the crime they didn't commit. They get out, and Donald Trump wouldn't even give them an apology. That's injustice, my friend. That's a false accusation. Go ahead.
He has never felt one moment of sympathy for those people.
That's right. That's right, because he doesn't empathize with them. He empathizes with his fellow billionaires. I absolutely agree with you. Empathy is the key word. Able to put yourself in someone else's shoes. I think if you can put yourself in another person's shoes, which is supposed to be what Christianity is all about in Judaism, you know, love thy neighbor as thyself, imagine yourself in someone else's situation, and you will support equality under the law. You'll support equality just in your basic dealings with people. But this particular, and that's why we can't attack all white men either, because there are absolutely empathetic white men who don't sexually assault women and who believe in the equality of all. So,
I know a lot of great white men.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm arguably a white man myself. So, you know, but the point is that anytime it's the lack of empathy, and now there's this victimization for people who lack empathy. Oh my God, they said happy holidays to me. I don't have any empathy for the fact that they don't celebrate the holidays I do, and so I'm the victim. You know, those gay people, they want to get married. I don't want them to get married. I'm the victim. All I wanted them to do is live in oppression. You know, I want slaves, and now they're taking away my slaves. I'm the victim. Right? I mean, that's kind of the heart of the Confederate argument, right?
Yes, they really are the snowflakes, too, because the smallest little, and all of a sudden they are just, oh my God, I'm the victim.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the cake baking or the happy, I mean, that's just, they have no idea what real people actually experience in this country.
That's exactly right. Thank you for your call, Nita. I appreciate it. Call in again sometime. Let me go to Leanne. She's on line 3 in San Diego, California. Hey, Leanne, how are you?
Hi, how are you? I love your show. Really,
thank you.
Really, very good show. Learned a lot from you. My question to you is, we know these people project. That's what they do. They do the bad thing, and then they turn it around and say, no, you're doing what they do to you.
Donald Trump is the master of projection. He's accused every single crime he's committed, he's accused others of committing. That's right.
Right. He's the one doing it, but then he's saying that you're doing it to him. So we know these people are cheating. We know they're cheating. They cheated in the election. What's our strategy to win against this group of Republicans that are cheating? A million, trillion of us can go out and vote, but if they're cheating, we're never going to win. So what do we do? How do we win against cheaters? They're cheating, voter ID laws, redistricting, putting a shill Republican on the Supreme Court. How are we going to win against that?
Well, I think there's
against
two ways.
Against the cheater.
Well, there's two ways I know of. One is to discover it and call it out. The free press, frankly, still exists. I know Donald Trump doesn't want a free press. They control Republicans, all three branches of government, but they don't control the press yet. They control Fox, but they don't control the rest of the press. So finding it out, calling them out, making clear that they are keeping people from voting, making clear when they're rigging the system, whether it's Electoral College or gerrymandering, or, yes, a Supreme Court justice that for the first time where they don't let Obama pick his, even though he was popularly elected, and they let a minority president and a minority Senate, minority being people who the vast majority of Americans do not want in power, letting them choose a Supreme Court justice. So calling them out is number one. Number two, to be blunt, we need supermajorities. W.B. Du Bois famously said in The Souls of Black Folk, which was written around 1910 or so, about 100 years ago, in talking about how African Americans were going to rise up out of their second-class status. He said, you got to be better than the white guy. You got to be much better. If you're ever going to have an equal chance, you got to be much, much better. Now, don't get me wrong. That's unfair. It shouldn't be that way. We have to get supermajorities. We can't win. 51% is not enough. We can win 54%, and because of gerrymandering and because of the undemocratic nature of the Senate, we still won't take over Congress. We opened the Electoral College. Hillary Clinton won by 3 million votes. She kicked his behind, but she still didn't take power. So we have to win by supermajorities. But here's the bright side. Supermajorities are not impossible. We can do it. And once we win, and we might need 55-60% of the vote to win, which is why every single person you know should be harassed by you, register to vote. Make sure that your registration is there. Make sure you vote. Drive people to vote. This morning, I was actually at the courthouse doing some other work, saw a woman there getting an ID. I asked her if she was registered to vote. She said she was not. And I said, here's how you register to vote. Please do it. And before she left, I made her promise me that she was going to register to vote. We have to win supermajorities, but we still can win supermajorities. Now, in some states, Pennsylvania, Georgia come to mind, your vote might not even be counted, at least in Virginia. And in most of the states now, we have paper records. That's a cause I've been fighting for ever since 2000. And right now, it's in the majority of states, but there's still about 11, 12 states, again, the worst are Pennsylvania and Georgia, where in some places in Florida, where you don't have the right to have a paper ballot. But the point is, if we win with our supermajorities, and if we encourage everyone to get out and vote, and we get 55, 56, 57% of the vote, we can win beyond the margin of cheating. Al Gore won the election in 2000. He won nationwide. He won in Florida. But he didn't win beyond the margin of cheating. And because they cheated, so we have to win by supermajorities. But once we do, we can dismantle the system that keeps people from voting. We can dismantle the barriers to voting, whether it's not letting ex-felons vote or not allowing people to get voter ID. We can dismantle the gerrymandering that control. I mean,
but we can't dismantle the he cheated and he won the election, but they won't take the Kavanaugh off the Supreme Court.
Well, here's how we deal with the Supreme Court. Here's how we deal with the Supreme Court.
He's an illegitimate president. He's an illegitimate. Supreme Court on the court.
You're right that he's an illegitimate president, and you're right he put an illegitimate man on the Supreme Court, and with an illegitimate Senate, by the way, because the Senate that voted for him represents about 45% of the population. They don't represent a majority. That's never happened in American history before. And by the way, I wrote an article all about this that you can find on justiceunbound.org or bluevirginia.us, or just look up Mark Levine and undemocratic government, and you can find it on Google. But this is exactly what I write about. The president wasn't chosen by the American people. The Congress wasn't chosen by the American people. The House because of gerrymandering, and the Senate is naturally undemocratic, and that these tiny little small box states get two senators. Wyoming doesn't even have has 600,000 people. They get two senators. California has 66 times that population and only gets two senators. Each Dakota gets two senators, but Los Angeles doesn't get two, which is, you know, 12 times the size of both Dakotas put together. So we have structurally undemocratic things. I'll tell you what, Leanne, I need to take a break. But when I come back, I want to talk about how to reform the United States Supreme Court to deal with an illegitimate justice like Brett Kavanaugh. So stay tuned. 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. And on Facebook.com/MarkLevineTalk, I'll post the links to the article that I wrote. Talk to you soon.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking about playing the victim card. When is it appropriate? When is it not appropriate? Let me tell you when it's not appropriate. It's not appropriate when you want the right to persecute, when you want the right to oppress. I'm not being allowed to be a racist. I'm a victim. I'm not being allowed to deny things to gay couples. I'm a victim. I'm not being allowed to rape women. I'm a victim. No, no, none of you are victims. You don't have a right to oppress. Oh my God, gay people are getting married. I oppose that. I'm the victim. No, it's not your life. If you're being victimized, you are being denied something, not your right. I'm not being allowed to missionize in public schools. Well, it's not about your right to control others' lives. You have no right to control others' lives. You don't have a right to tell other people who they can marry, other people what religion they can practice, other people whether they have the right to be free from abuse. That's no right at all. You have no right to use the power of the government to mistreat others. That's what the Taliban does. It's called a theocracy. You're not a victim if you can't control someone else's lives against their will. No. They have as much right to be free from you as you have to be free from them. All right, Leanne, go ahead. I'll give you the final word.
It's me, Reggie. From.
Oh, we have Reggie. Okay.
So, I agree with you. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, I agree with you 100% on everything. I just can think that these people are going to get more and more tricky, more and more sophisticated, and I just think our side's going to have to be just as bad as they are if we're going to win. I know, go out and vote, everybody, but we're dealing with some really bad people.
Well, we have to reclaim the majority. One of the ways, and I did say I would get to this, so I will. Sorry, Reggie, you'll have to call back on Monday. Is how to reform the Supreme Court. What I would do. And there's some Democrats are talking about adding seats on the Supreme Court, which is perfectly legal. But if we do that, the Republicans can then add seats later. And soon we've got 27 people on the Supreme Court. My own view is the best way to do it is to have 18-year terms for Supreme Court justices. There's 9 Supreme Court justices. So it would mean that every 2 years, and I would do it on the odd year of a presidential year, every 2 years, the president gets to appoint justices. It's not fair, for example, that Jimmy Carter appointed none in his 4 years and Donald Trump appointed 2 in just 2 years. This way would give a regularization to it, and it would mean that we, the Democratic branches, get to control the government. Of course, we also got to get rid of the Electoral College and gerrymandering. I got a very full plate, but none of this will get done if you don't get out and vote. If you're not registered, register now. The state deadlines are around the corner. Don't forget to vote. This is Mark Levine. Talk to you Monday.